If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, son. I'm Luke. I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison, here to drink first and talk about Star Trek second.
Yeah.
It's a Quark's Bar episode, Adam.
Sure is. We've landed on the Quark's Bar square.
Yeah.
On the Game of Buttholes.
Right on the heels of a Coco No-No square.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be that close to each other.
I mean, we've had such a 6 months on the Game of Buttholes that like we haven't done this very often at all. And now it seems like all we ever do. It's fine. This used to be the only type of show we did.
It's interesting that our lives went to hell over those 6 months also.
Yeah. What's that about?
I don't know. What are you drinking today, buddy?
All right. I have a story about the cocktail that I mixed.
Cocktail. Wow.
And I did make a cocktail. So my wife and I were out of town over the weekend.
You keep bringing it up. You brag, brag, brag.
Oh, I'm going to brag about this cocktail I had at this at this restaurant, Ben. So
okay.
I would say the genre of this restaurant is like, I couldn't even describe it. It's got the steak. It's got the pasta, like American restaurant is probably what they just should have called it. American restaurant. Have a great meal. The dog's with us. She's coming everywhere with us. So we're like the people on the patio with the fucking dog eating.
Rambunctious puppy.
Yeah. It's another story. So we're out there and we have a great meal. And the did you save room for dessert moment happens.
Mm-hmm. How's everything tasting? Everybody save room for dessert?
The thing to say every time is, I'll look at a menu.
Yeah.
Dessert menu gets dropped. All the usual suspects are there. You got your little dessert cake.
A flourless chocolate cake, creme brulee.
Every time.
Plate of berries.
The usual suspects. And then they had their dessert cocktails. Again, you got your Amaros. You got your... brandy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what other things people drink after. Oh, an espresso.
Yeah, sure.
And then at the very bottom of this list was a mezcal white Russian. That was my face. That was my reaction exactly. What? You can't do that. That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. You're telling me you're going to swap out the vodka in a white Russian for mezcal?
Madness.
So you know I ordered it.
Yeah.
You know I ordered it.
That's the thing to do. When you see a thing on a menu that doesn't make any fucking sense, you gotta get it.
I got it, and Ben, it was delicious.
Wow.
It's not what I made for the show. I tell you this because it served as inspiration for what I did make. Now, here's a thing that I do. I will make this cocktail for people when we have them over for dinner. Mm-hmm. I know I've made this cocktail for you on occasion. It's a cocktail I made when we went up to Seattle. And we're just kind of dragging ass. The day before Thanksgiving is the time where you want to like up the energy level. Mm-hmm. Guys, we just got into town. Let's do this. So what I will do is I will make a cocktail that includes couple of shots of espresso or very strong cold brew coffee. Mm-hmm. a shot of Amaro.
Right.
You put a shot and a half, like the Adam and Ben shot is a 2 ounce shot.
Right.
Of vodka in there.
Mm-hmm.
You shake it all around. You pour it in a glass with some ice. And that is your suburban speedball right there, baby. You're on a rocket ship back to party town. And so that's the standard, right?
Yeah.
After my experience out of town, I was like, could I take out the vodka and could I put in mezcal?
Wow.
So what I did is I made that drink with, instead of vodka, mezcal, Amaro, couple of shots of coffee.
Okay.
Handful of ice, swished it all around. This is a drink without a name.
Name it, man.
It kind of works. I've been mixing more with Amaro than I have in years past, and it mm-hmm. is a really interesting
yeah.
second or third ingredient to a thing where you don't want to fuck around with simple syrup.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't have any around.
It's going to give you a complexity of flavor that you would not get in most other things.
And I really love mixing it with coffee. I think a lot of people do mix Amaro and coffee, so that's not like new ground. But mixing those two things and a third thing
yeah.
in order to give it the booze buzz is what I did here. So that's the drink I got because I'm drinking coffee all day.
Yeah.
Per your advice to me, the tired puppy boy. What about you, Ben? What are you drinking?
I'm drinking some straight mezcal right now. I brought the last can of hard seltzer and the last can of hard cider I had in my fridge out for what's next. But right now, I'm starting my record with a copita of some Agua del Sol Bequiche.
Oh, hold that thing up for the viewers.
Forget her name, but a friend of DeSoto made this for
us. Oh, that's awesome.
For us.
You should post that on the gram, dude. That is real nice.
I really should. I think that it probably did get posted on the gram when we opened it up on a code 47, but mm-hmm. I'll post it again. I'll take a glamour shot.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, this bottle of Bequiche from Agua del Sol is actually something that the podfather Jesse Thorne gave to me.
Wow.
And it is really delicious.
Good pick by Jesse.
An easy drinking Amaro. If you're new to Amaro, this is not a super like high threshold crazy gunmetal flavor or anything like that.
You said Amaro. Did you mean mezcal?
I meant mezcal.
Okay.
I'm already right. hammered.
Jeez. Are you now?
No. But I had Amaro on the brain. I don't know why.
It's because all I ever do is talk about it. Wow, well, we've got the drinks teed up, Ben, and we've got an episode ahead.
I bet
the characters in this episode would have killed each other for a taste of these cocktails.
Yeah, if they didn't turn the mezcal bottle into a stabbing implement first.
Yeah.
We got some fresh fish, Adam. Can we get into it?
Let's do it, Ben. It's Star Trek Voyager, Season 3, Episode 3, The Chute.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
An episode that opens in a very cranky, yelly, alarmy prison
yeah.
when Kim gets dumped in.
This
not
is
the
a,
sort of place you can expect much sleep, I'd say.
A prison that is made all out of Core 10 steel. The shaking chains are in full effect.
Oh, yeah.
Sawdust on the floor.
Yep.
It's not a nice place to be, and we pan over to the chute in question, and it, like, irises open. I love those irises like that.
The kind of chute that if it closed on you...
Oh, yeah.
It's just going to take off some fingers.
That's a cutter right there. And down slides Harry Kim.
I see you. Kill him.
Yeah!
These aliens look like early era Star Trek movie Klingons.
Especially Zio, who is such an imposing figure throughout this episode.
Yeah. These guys all want a piece of the new prisoner, Harry Kim. And one of them kind of crowds his way to the front and claims Harry.
I say you let me have him first.
This turns into a fist fight. One of those prison fights where everybody gets in a big circle and it's like almost indistinguishable from a breakdancing
situation, except for there's two people in the middle, not one.
The thing about Garrett Wong's hairstyle as worn in this scene is that this 90s hairstyle punches great.
Yeah,
It reads so well when this character is hit in the face over and over again because it kind of pom-poms around.
Yeah, so much secondary action with that hair.
There's a moment here which is like Harry Kim's hero turn when the camera racks in and he's like, okay, guys, it's not that I'm stuck in here with you. It's that you're stuck in here with me. And then the fists start flying.
Yeah. He winds up getting pushed to the edge of the circle at a certain point and lands in the arms of what he thought would be a friendly face. Tom Paris is there. Tom Paris hauls off on him.
Yeah, you got to impress the prison alpha in this moment, and that's the choice that Tom Paris makes.
Welcome to Fight Club, Harry.
I feel like when you're in Starfleet, you agree on some rules up front. If we're ever going to be in prison and you have to punch me, stay away from the moneymaker, all right? Keep it in the torso area if you can, or the knee.
Do you think it's easier to sell a fake gut punch than it is a fake face punch?
Like, no question.
Like, do you
think... because you can make contact with the torso a lot more than you could with the face, right?
Yeah. I wonder if Paris pulled his punch a little bit. I mean, it doesn't look like it.
No.
Harry looks fucked up. Paris explains to anyone who will listen that Harry Kim is going to be his property. Due to the fact that Harry Kim is why Paris is in jail to begin with. I kind of wish that they, because the prisoners all seem to be the same type of alien, and I wish they had addressed that a little bit. Like, who the fuck are you guys? Like, where did you even come from?
You don't look like us.
What's wrong with your foreheads?
I could not get past the credit sequence, Ben. I replayed the credit sequence 4 or 5 times. You know why? Beans Morocco.
Beans Morocco is in this episode.
You get a Beans Morocco in your episode, you know you're going to strap in for something good. One of the great careers in all of Hollywood.
Oh, yeah?
He has been in every television show that the Card Daddy has ever seen and enjoyed. I'm pretty sure this guy is one of Card Daddy's favorite actors. And with a name like that, you telling me you don't have a part for Beans? Why don't we give a part to Beans? He's a working actor.
Give Beans a part.
Yeah. Still alive. 87 years young.
Man.
Beans Morocco.
Well, cheers to Beans Morocco, Adam.
Yeah.
We forgot to have a toast at the beginning of this drunk
episode.
But I'll drink to Beans. So they finally get a moment alone. Tom has a little hovel set aside for himself that he and Harry go back to, and they talk about how they got locked up. They both kind of got run through this
Kafka-esque, terrible judicial system that the Akritirians employ.
Yeah, judicial theater, I call it.
Talk about an awful alien name for a drunkisode. I'm going to hit the pommel horse most times I try to pronounce that one.
Yeah, and they also talk a little bit about, like, what a fucked up place this is. They think they're 300 meters underground. They haven't even seen any guards. This is even worse than Ruripente.
It is.
Like, at least there you could get to the surface.
They don't make a lot of hay out of this, but Harry Kim's ideas about how to get out of there are so fucking stupid.
We've got to explain to somebody that there's been a mistake.
Who did you have in mind?
That I really could have used a reverse shot of Tom Paris, like, oh my God, I'm stuck in prison with this fucking guy. Like, he's my best friend, but also, holy shit. Like, this is bad. Kim is going to be a drag on Paris the whole time. It's something that you and I know as the viewers,
right,
but not something that Paris gives voice or attitude toward in a way that I feel like he could credibly do. Like, Kim is going to get Paris killed.
Yeah, in the same way that Paris is, like, probably the worst wingman you could imagine for Harry.
Yeah. Paris has been to prison many times before.
Yeah. This is the briar patch for Paris.
Nothing is made out of that, though.
Yeah, yeah. I've been accused of a lot of things, Harry. I came on this ship out of prison. I'm used to this shit.
Yeah. Kim was like, let's find a guard and just tell him that there's a big mistake. It's not what you do, Harry Kim.
I could tell that day that Harry Kim wouldn't make it here.
There are no guards to even talk to, Harry Kim, but yeah. There is the clamp, and this is a thing that is attached to every prisoner's head. It's yeah. a device that turns everyone in the prison into kind of a Rorschach type of figure, and then they can't take it out without dying.
Usually a little blinky device stuck to your head is a good thing in Star Trek.
Right.
But not yeah. here.
Yeah, no one's having a clip show time in this prison.
No. So they also talk about how hungry they both are, and Paris has been here for a couple of days. Paris is down by law at this point, and he hasn't seen any food show up yet.
Yikes. I mean, you can tell why everyone's a little edgy. They're hypoglycemic.
Yeah, they're hangry. An alarm goes off, and everybody's really excited because food is coming. And it's even worse than shit on a shingle, Adam. It's fucking Cliff Bars.
It's shingle on a shingle.
Yeah. That's it? That's yeah. what they get to eat? And people are shivving each other over it?
Some guy gets his throat slashed fighting over this thing. What yeah. a terrible way to go.
Yeah. Desperate for a Cliff Bar, and you didn't even get to eat it.
We finally cut back to Voyager, where Janeway's log tells us that Kim and Paris have been gone for days, and the Akritirian authorities are extremely unhelpful in this moment. We get to meet one of these authority figures, Ben.
Yeah.
This ambassador, Lyria, is Robert Pine, Chris Pine's dad.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew that it was Robert Pine. I didn't know there was any relation.
Amazing.
What a hunk.
Yeah, he's got good news and bad news. The bad news is that Paris and Kim are in prison for terrorism. The good news, he's Chris Pine's father.
I'm sure the same could be said of anyone who was near the explosion.
Yeah.
Which, if you're a real like ham and egger of an actor who's just like a working actor like Robert Pine, you're going to be okay when you're Chris Pine's father.
Yeah, you're going to do fine. He still works, right?
Like yeah.
He's got recent credits.
Absolutely. Guy works his ass off.
He explains that Kim and Paris have been found guilty of bombing like a YMCA or something.
You can blow up an old car. You can strap cartoon dynamite to support beams. You can do ever what you feel.
Bam, bam, bam. So, no help, and we're actually also going to be impounding your ship and searching for evidence of the trilithium explosives that they used do it.
Boy, this is an escalation to the moment. Holy yeah. shit. The look on Janeway's face when she is told to heave to and be boarded is like withering.
Like, fuck, I'm going to heave to.
Yeah. Robert Pine does not get compliance in this moment. And instead, Janeway takes her ship out of orbit in an extremely tacky effects shot.
Yeah, the very, very digital space effects really stood out in this episode.
Look, I'm not in favor of George Lucasing a bunch of old Star Trek episodes, but I might just snip this off of it completely. We don't need this shot. This is addition by subtraction. Get it out of here.
Somebody do one of those like YouTube comparison videos where they render this stuff out on their home PC in 2022, and it looks way better.
You telling me we don't have 20 different versions of the Voyager leaving the orbit of a place?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on,
yays.
In prison, I don't know if you get this. Sometimes I get a little scalp acne. Can't stop picking at it when it's there. It's bad. And Kim is messing with his clamp, like so much scalp acne when Paris returns. And it's Kim that's getting edgy from the thing. And Paris explains that it's the clamp, man.
The clamp be like that.
Yeah.
It fucks with your equilibrium.
The way to fight the clamp is to think about better times.
Yeah. Don't succumb to the clamp. Fight it.
Right. It's tough. So they start thinking about better times, but they also start thinking about how to escape through the chute.
Yeah.
And I don't know. In this scene, I thought, let's say your order of operations was escaping the chute and then dealing with the clamp.
Right.
Don't you have to start with the clamp? I feel like as soon as you get up in the chute is going to do something to the clamp that kills you or something.
Likely the clamp is some kind of low jack or... Like, I know that Ruripente doesn't have an electronic frontier.
No.
This place probably does, and I bet the clamp is a part of it.
Yes. This is what was so crazy to me in the scene is, like, I would make clamp job one.
Yeah, but they do talk about, like Paris saw a guy try to take out his clamp, and it punched his ticket, so...
Yeah, that guy's probably an idiot, though. This is a prison full of idiots.
That guy never went to Starfleet Academy.
That's what I'm saying. I think Kim's way smarter than those people.
Well, Kim is who Tom Paris puts his hopes in because he's got a pipe and he's like, hey, like with a couple of modifications, I bet you could use this to turn off that super shocky force field on the chute.
Harry Kim's MacGruber idea of making jailbreaking inventions out of prison materials is about to come to fruition here.
Yeah.
Paris, hand me that brick of pseudo food.
We only have 15 seconds left, Harry.
Zio, hand me that other brick of weird food.
Only 11 seconds left now, Harry.
Hey, Rib. Your name is actually Rib? Seriously, like that's your name? Rib? I'm supposed to believe that...
It's better than Beans Morocco. Back on the Voyager, they have to have a McLaughlin group.
Issue one!
And they decide that the best way to deal with this is solve the crime, figure out who blew up the YMCA first, and then we'll go back, we'll offer up the off-world terrorism collaborators to James Kirk's dad, and then he'll be in a mood to help us.
Janeway claps back at BLT in a way that I found very bracing in the moment.
We've got to go back for Harry and Tom, Alana.
Nuh-uh. Fuck that. We're not going to have any of that toed in this McLaughlin group, Eleanor Clift.
I feel like it's a little bit strange that they choose to trust the suspicions of the Aquaterians? Aquaterians?
Mm-hmm. Like Acrid? Acriterian?
Oh. Acriterians.
Acritrian?
Ankylosaur.
But they are going to trust those guys. That there were some off-world collaborators with the terrorists, and they're going to help them in their war on terror.
Right, and part of... what makes this problem especially difficult to solve is that, like, the trilithium that was said to have been used in this attack is often confused with paralithium, which is a type of thing that old jalopy ships used to get around.
Trilithium was, like, the thing in the missiles that old guy in Star Trek Generations was using to blow up suns, right?
You don't have to do this, Solon.
That's right, yeah.
So they're saying, like, you can convert dilithium into trilithium, but you can also convert paralithium into trilithium.
Right.
As long as you've got some lithium, you can probably get to three of them.
That's right. Yeah, and if you can do that, you can be imprisoned for a crime that you didn't commit.
Yeah. So that's all the evidence those guys needed to convict the Voyager crew and Tom and Harry. So they are off to look for... paralithium, because it's used in ionic propulsion in this area. But
right.
back in the jail, we're modifying this pipe with 14 gauge Romex in order to trip the breaker on the food chute. You can find most gauges of Romex at your local home center, but we're salvaging some from a demoed wall panel.
Ordinarily, you'd want to run it through some conduit so that your local inspector will pass it for code.
That way it'll be safe, and it won't cause a fire when you seal it up in the wall behind the drywall.
Nothing suspicious about this. Paris is the lookout while Kim is doing some hot wiring of the chute.
Yeah.
And we see something happen here that I know, Ben, you and I have seen in the war movies of our viewing past. I want to say this is from Rescue Dawn, right? Wasn't it Rescue Dawn where they talked about what's in their dream fridge?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They start coming up with the food that will keep them sane, the food that they'll look forward to when they get the hell out of this hellhole.
I've definitely had that experience. Like I did like an Outward Bound type program in high school, and I was in the wilderness for 30 days. And
wasn't that the experience where all you did was like drink Kool-Aid and get diarrhea?
I didn't get diarrhea. I drank Kool-Aid and it made my
your
poops...
diarrhea, Ben. Don't it, try to.
It made my poops green, but they were solid BMs. They were not loose.
You heard it here first. Diarrhea Ben had green solid poop.
Yeah. And never since. But yeah, that feeling of like I haven't had like restaurant style food in a really long time and don't know when I next will is a real thing. I liked it a lot. Like Paris was like reminiscing about real Sandrines.
Yeah, the Sandrines without Neelix. It's the best one of all.
The Sandrines where Harry isn't there to capitalize on all of the romantic opportunities that Tom would be otherwise capitalizing on.
Yeah, guess what? Kim also does not capitalize on his wire work here because he gets some wharf lightning for the trouble. It is rough stuff.
Yeah. I think this is just the shoot's reaction to them saying that they would eat Neelix's food if they could.
It's a scene that also initiates a fairly complex knife fight with the guy from before.
Yeah.
A real Beat It video style knife fight, and one that Tom Paris ends up losing. Kim, in this scene, goes absolutely wild with this tiny piece of pipe in a way that I couldn't help but laugh at, in a way that they weren't going for, because the way Kim swings this tiny pipe around makes him look like he's holding a novelty baseball bat that they give away before a game. Like, it's too tiny to look threatening.
You can't double hand something that short and make it look threatening, I feel like.
You need two, right?
Right, yeah.
Give him two pipes. He, John Woo.
It makes him look pathetic in a way that I don't think was intentional. And
yeah,
I understand that they're supposed to be at the end of their rope and like he's supposed to be like panicking because Tom Paris has taken a shiv to the gut, but like what he is doing has the effect of causing all of the other prisoners to back away in fear, and that is not the energy that he is giving, you know.
No, there's a desperation that this reeks of that makes it not threatening at all. And I almost think that not having a pipe at all would be more effective because it would make Kim look like he's in more danger than he is.
Yeah. The shiv fight does not go well, Enterprise.
It goes especially unwell for Paris, who has to be dragged back to Kim's cell after this swarthy prisoner named Zio makes his own medical pronouncement by like touching the wound.
Yeah, this guy's done for. I almost thought he was gonna like heal him by laying his hands on him or something.
Yeah.
Zio has this kind of like hippie energy that
totally
that in this scene I was like, oh man, like this guy's gonna be like the guy in the jail that has like some magic power that saves them and gets them through.
I totally want to rent scuba gear from this guy in Hawaii. And just like try to befriend him in that way, like where he'll tell you where the real good spot is, like the place he doesn't tell the tourists. You guys want to see some turtles, huh? I know where the turtles are.
Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
They go back to the hovel that Tom Paris had secured previously, and it's full of old dudes who don't want to take them in.
Including Beans Morocco. Ladies and gentlemen, Beans Morocco.
This place is ours.
Get out! Get out! Get out!
Beans Morocco is there.
You don't want to get back to where you're living and find Beans there.
No.
He's only there to deliver bad news.
Yeah. Beans Morocco sounds like a dish.
I like how they taste and they cook pretty fast.
It does, which is why when I saw his credit on screen and started Googling, that's what came up.
You're like, oh, cumin, delicious.
It looks like you're searching for Moroccan beans. And also this extremely weird sex position.
You've been to Morocco, right?
I have.
Did you have beans while you were there?
I don't remember having beans. Beans were not on the menu, boys.
You missed out, Adam. That's one of the great delicacies of North Africa is the beans Morocco.
God, I really blew it.
Yeah.
Might have to go back.
They wind up showing up on Zio's doorstep. Zio breaks away from writing the next chapter of The Hobbit or something to take them in. And Zio has expressed some interest in Paris's boots. And Harry actually uses his own boots as a tool of barter. And Zio's like, sorry, I can't help you, dude. Your feet are way smaller than mine. Paris, those might fit me. Yours definitely not.
Zio wants that pipe. And Kim is like, I'm not willing to part with that. So what is on the table, though, isn't that pipe. It's bringing Zio with them. Like, look, we're going to get out of here. I know you don't believe it with this haircut and this piece of pipe.
We're going out tonight.
Zio's like, I don't know if I've got time. When you're a writer like I am, what you need to do is block out the time it takes to write your manifesto. These are my morning pages, is what I'm trying to say.
Writer's block is an excuse not to work, and I've professionalized. You know?
Yeah. Look, guys, I'm turning to the camera right now. Friends of DeSoto, if you want to finish your manifesto, you just need to block out the time.
Just every day. Every day. Starting at 9 a.m., that's writing time. You turn off the Wi-Fi, you get the fucking pages done.
Doesn't matter if it's 5 minutes or an hour. Progress is progress to the manifesto.
How many people in our audience do you think are currently working on a manifesto?
I think a non-zero amount of our viewers are working on a manifesto.
How many people that currently co-host this show are working on a manifesto?
I think a non-zero amount of hosts of this show are currently working on a manifesto. The problem has been I just can't carve out the time.
Yes. I'm like, I never get past like human history as the history of class struggle. And then I'm like, I don't know what to put after this.
Eventually I'll get to my demands. I just can't wait to get to my demands. Mm-hmm, but I'm not ready yet.
I'm not like as scraggly as I was at the peak of the lockdown. I really like bearded out for a while there.
Didn't you want more Tom Paris beard? Like by the time we get Paris beard, it feels like it's too late.
It's too late. We don't get to relish in his beardy.
Eat hearty, brother.
I cut you off though, Ben. I think you were going to say you're caring more about your facial grooming than before.
I was just saying like I was making a lot more headway on the manifesto then, you know?
You know what? It's funny. You want to look like the manifesto writer you want to be seen as.
You want to look like the manifesto writer that would really put chills in people when they saw the police sketch of?
Yeah. When you unfurl the rags that you've written it on. This guy's not messing around. He wrote it on coffee bags.
The Voyager has made pretty quick work of looking for fugitives. And the first people that they pull up on are a gentleman and a young lady, and they're like, hey, so we're just kind of looking around. Anybody that's got paralithium, we're asking them about this. What do you guys know? And the girl is like, don't tell her anything.
I love how universal this moment is when there's two people who are somewhat the same age together in the same place.
Yeah.
Janeway's like, we'll have to transport you and your wife to our ship for interrogation. And he's like,
she's my sister, and our political views are none of your business.
Ew, what the hell?
It doesn't matter what century you're in. That is always going to be extremely off-putting.
These people spill the beans pretty quickly that they are exactly who the Voyager is looking for. And not only that, BLT detects the trilithium in their ship.
This guy's sister, Peary, pops off at Janeway about how easy it would be for her to just take the Voyager on a rescue mission, shoot a couple of torps at the prison, free both their political prisoners and Paris and Kim, and call it a fucking day.
Yeah.
And it's such an interesting moment in the scene because Janeway's reaction is like, we don't do that kind of thing. We're Starfleet. But it does soften her up in this scene in a way that changes her entire attitude from what it was in the beginning.
Yeah, like, we don't know what Open Sky, the terrorist organization, or Patriots, depending on which direction you're looking at them from, want.
Sure.
But this kind of raises an interesting question that I wish that the episode had engaged with more. Like, there's a big conversation in the, like, international development world right now about, like, you know, when you donate, like, a bunch of, like, medical equipment to a country that has, like, a really fucked up government and, like, work with their Ministry of Health, you sort of validate that government by working with them. And it's like, okay, like, on the one hand, like, more people will be helped if we can get this government to distribute this vaccine or pill or whatever. On the other hand, like, it further entrenches the power of this corrupt thing. And it's sort of like an imperialist attitude to take toward a developing country when you do it that way. And, like, that's sort of implied by this Open Sky group in this episode, and the episode just, like, completely avoids engaging with that.
It does.
I just wanted to do one thing to, like, make me sympathize with these two, you know?
It doesn't make Vel any more sympathetic that he's, like, wearing these big fucking goofy horns and and, like, a bear skin.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what put a on dope. A shirt, Vel. What the fuck is wrong with you?
It does make me think, why not do this rescue mission, Janeway? It would kick a lot of ass to see the Voyager strafe in there and get these guys out, but we don't get an answer to that at this point. We go back to the prison where we see Tom Paris is reluctant to trust Zio. Maybe part of that reluctance comes from his confidence beard that he's now grown. This is a passage of time beard. This is the technology we're seeing right now.
The second he got stabbed, a bunch of hair follicles started, like, kicking into high gear in his face.
Let me tell you something, man. If all you had to do was take a wound to the gut with a stabbing implement to grow a full and lustrous beard, I'd want you to stab me, Ben.
Wow.
Stab me in the belly.
Do you want a beard that bad?
I want one pretty bad.
Wow.
I'm just not willing to walk the miles it takes to get one, is the thing.
Yeah.
Nor is my wife. My wife especially doesn't want me walking those miles.
No, yeah. Her opinion matters.
It really does.
The person up against whom that face rubs most often.
She who has to look at my face.
Adam, have you had your broads today?
That's a great call. I'm going to go get them. Got him. Hey, did you see the Brode BOGO code that went out last week?
I did not.
Oh, Ben, I should have forwarded you the email.
Why didn't you forward me?
Because I thought, stupidly, that you were already getting their emails.
I probably am. I just don't look at those. I don't look at promotions.
You gotta accept Brode into your inbox.
I gotta put him on the green list.
Yeah, man. I've got four boxes coming.
Fuck. I can't believe you got through the ones that you ordered the last time, when they sponsored the show.
I know we haven't had to talk about our finances lately, but that's a business expense.
What the fuck?
Well, I've got to get that platinum, get that low enlargement.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's auraframes.com, and the code is SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
I've got to get that
platinum.
What now? Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
It Paris gets to looking worse and worse in this episode, but I feel like at this point he like hits a midpoint where he's like sweaty and slightly beardy in a way that's really attractive, actually.
Even Zio is like, you know, I'm kind of the alpha in terms of good looking prisoners, but when I look down at this sweaty Tom Paris, goddamn.
Yeah.
Good looking guy. Too bad he's going to be dead soon.
Yeah. He sort of wants them to leave him behind, and Harry's like, I'm not going to do that. And Zio starts to explain about his manifesto.
This is just unwelcome. Like, it's fun to have friends who are writers, but when that's the only thing they want to talk about ever.
Yeah, their work.
God. Your work is not a personality, Zio.
Yeah. I think the problem for Zio is that he doesn't have readers, you know? Like, if people were reading this, you wouldn't have to tell everyone about it.
The readers you need, Zio, are all around you.
We're in hell right now, gentlemen.
But he's got a theory about the clamp and the old, you know, this prison and the clamp. His manifesto is about all of this stuff, and he thinks it's like a big experiment about making them kill each other to prove something about the human condition. I know that the very term is racist, but
what's fun is seeing this escape happen, because the pipe has been wired and it's ready to be tested, and so Kim takes it to the chute.
I was really worried that they were leaving Paris behind.
I thought so too, yeah. When Zio touches the chute, it does not shock him.
Yeah.
And so they crawl right up in there, and it leads, Ben, after a couple of twists and turns through the ducting.
Yeah.
To a hatch, and they wipe off the glass to the hatch.
Yeah.
And the camera pulls back to reveal the awful truth of their circumstances.
They're not underground. They're on a space station.
This space station isn't underground with me. I'm in space with you.
fun twist, Adam.
Yeah, this is great. This is the moment before you get the credits in an episode in Lost. That's what this moment is.
Right. This is the end of the fucking season in Lost.
Yeah.
This is the middle of a Voyager episode.
Right.
They're not leaving you dangling like J.J. Abrams.
There is no surface to escape to.
Yeah.
So this is a sad moment when Kim returns to Paris interrupting his sexy dream that he's having about the Delaney sisters.
Yeah.
And maybe Paris, you just let Paris sleep if you're Kim.
Paris is not looking great at this point. He's wan.
Yeah, Zio has diagnosed Paris with wan. Call your doctor if you experience wan for longer than 4 hours, the way Paris is.
He's kind of losing the plot, too, right? Like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
Well, especially because in a few scenes previous, Paris is like, look, Kim, if it comes down to it and I get stabbed by a rando, I want you to get the fuck out of here and up into the chute and save yourself.
Yeah. And now he's like, you killed me, you piece of shit.
Yeah, in this moment, he's like, you owe it to me to potentially die yourself to get me out of here with you. Do not leave me here alone.
Yeah. He's not looking good.
No, and I mean, no one's feeling good. What with all the laughter going on inside of all of their brains, there's sort of a weird scene where they have trouble getting some sleep.
Yeah.
Because there's a studio audience making sound in their brains.
They're like sleeping together in a bed that is smaller than a twin bed. And I guess the clamp is just piping in like the Seinfeld audience or something.
I had an extremely difficult time seeing this scene. I was just in a normally lit room during the daytime, and I thought the contrast during this scene and many others made what I was watching extremely hard to parse. This was like maybe the worst of it, but like this scene was so dark to me.
It was very dark. I lowered the blinds, and that helped.
Oh, yeah. I bet you did. You don't want anyone to watch you watching Star Trek.
I put on my headphones.
That's what you do.
Got out of tube sock. Look at how wan he is. Oh, man.
Go from wan to wand. That's what you do. The next day, Kim and Zio are discussing an escape. Because while they were very disappointed to go up to the top of the chute and see that it was just a window out to space, the idea that they're on a space station does suggest an escape that has to do with a ship that could be there to drop off prisoners and those little food bricks. Yeah. Maybe they could hop onto the ship and take it.
I thought it was interesting that they were having this conversation just kind of like out in the open. Mm-hmm. Like this was not information that they were trying to keep from the other prisoners.
And this is a scene that really drew a line under the kind of crazy that Zio is, because Kim's trying to be serious with Zio about what they need to do to get the hell out of here, and Zio just will not shut up about the manifesto. Like, come on, Zio. Like, this is your chance to get out of here. And Kim is like, I'm not trying to read anything right now except for the instructions to a ship that's going to come here to drop off food bricks and more prisoners. What he wants to do right now, in this very moment, Ben, is foment.
Yeah.
And he starts fomenting like crazy in this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah! I cast a Troy!
Harry is really not himself. Like, I thought that Garrett Wong's performance here was really good. Like, he is still using his, like, Starfleet brain to, like, work the problem, but he's also, like, ignoring guys getting stabbed behind him.
And Harry Kim is, like, in his bones, like, in his very DNA, is, like, a character that is drawn to being left in space somewhere, which this Harry Kim has been.
there's a Harry Kim that got left even more in space than that. So
I know.
He'd probably sit there and say, crap.
This fomenting goes nowhere, though. This fomenting falls flat.
Yeah.
I love this moment. Like a bombing comedian at the Apollo, there's a giant cane going out to pull him off stage. Shit's getting thrown at him until finally some of this shit actually hits him in the head.
Yeah. He was kind of trying to like inspire the troops. Like, if we all work together, we can overthrow the plutocrats that exploit our labor or whatever. And
read
they're like,
the
fuck
room,
you, man.
Kim, no one's looking at that forehead as something they want to follow around.
Yeah. He is not really inspiring the troops. And frustrated, he heads back to... I guess this is Zio's hovel now, but what he finds is Tom Paris just in a daze, like disassembling that pipe.
He's like, if I just take the wiring and the circuitry out from the middle of this thing, I can use it as a pretty great sleeve for my penis. Now, if you've been confined to a prison for a crime you didn't commit, it can come in handy to have something for you to work out your sexual urges on.
Today, we're using silicone additives to retrofit this pipe as a fleshlight.
I'm Richard Trithewey, who will be spending today's episode in a federal penitentiary to experience what it's like.
Having a great time. It's the classic plumber's lament.
I'm down in the boiler room of this federal penitentiary, where you might be surprised at the technologies employed. So, Zio has grown impatient with the situation. He's watching Kim and Paris fuck around in his tiny apartment, and finally Zio's like, you guys gotta get out of here. Paris is dragging us all down. It really seems like Paris should die. Like, it would be easier for me, Kim, if you just killed Paris. Take him off the board, because he's dragging you down too. So much dead weight.
I was trying to teach you how to, like, work the clamp to your advantage, and now you're going to club your homie to death with his pipe? Come on.
You know what's great about the manifesto is you wrap this drapey towel over a Tom Paris,
yeah,
and you just choke him out with it. You can use the manifesto as a weapon.
It's a... It's one of the only manifestos that ever written that can cut off an air supply.
Kim's not going to do this. So Paris and Kim have to find a new place to live, which is a pretty desperate moment in the episode.
Yeah. But Zio's like, you can join me, follow the way of the manifesto, we'll recruit more. You get 7 friends to join the manifesto, and they'll each get 7 friends to join the manifesto.
Right.
You know, like... Pulse guns are at the other end of the chute now. Like, we can get up the chute, but there's still guys with guns. But if we have everybody on our side, if they all believe, we can really sell a lot of leggings.
It's the only reason you even write a manifesto, is to do something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Make big structural change is what a manifesto is for. And that's what Zio's all about here.
Yeah.
Not a killer.
If you want to survive in here, you'd better learn to be.
If you've been missing Chris Pine's father, I'm here to tell you that that he did not just get the one scene. He gets a second scene, and that scene is now. Janeway is negotiating with him about the release of Kim and Paris. But the Akritarians live in a society where, like, there's a movie that's been popping up on our antenna cable a lot lately, Ben. I don't know if you've seen this this movie with Ashley Judd called Double Jeopardy.
Oh, I've seen that movie.
It is insane as a movie.
It's absolutely bonk.
The state says you already killed your husband. They can't convict you of it a second time.
Almost as bonkers as the legal system as depicted in Double Jeopardy is the Akritarian legal system, which pronounces guilty is guilty no matter what new evidence you may have.
Yeah, the legal system cannot retroactively acknowledge a mistake.
Right.
Because that would cause the whole system to collapse.
And Robert Pine is like, yeah, it works great for us. It really keeps people from may or may not committing crimes, like,
yeah, I mean,
hey,
it's kind of the,
it's a real deterrent to doing anything, really.
It's the Ito logic, right? It's like, we're not really sure, like, how bad of a thing you did. We're just gonna condemn you to, like, a horrible death in a terrifying rusty prison.
At least the Ito are hanging dong. I mean, there's nothing about the Akritarians that suggests that anyone's having a good time.
There's nothing appealing about them at all. And so Janeway's like, all right, fuck you guys. I'm gonna go work with the terrorist guy that we have on board that hates you, because he seems like he's right.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, even if they are a terrorist.
So she's like, hey, I'm not actually gonna turn you over if you do this for me. Like, give me the coordinates. I'm gonna turn you guys over to your authorities unless you tell me where this prison is. And he's like, I don't think so. I've got different ideas, but and what I want you to do is get all of my friends out of jail also. And she's like, you don't have any leverage here.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, I love the impudence of Vel.
Yeah.
It's big fun.
I'm not a good negotiator, and I don't think this guy does a great job in this scene, but I love the fact that he, like, tries anything, because I never would, you know?
I mean, there's a desperation to this moment that I find really credible. Like, what does Vel have to lose? Anyway, no deal, is what Janeway says.
Inform the Akritarians that we're ready to turn the prisoners over.
She's just going to drop Vel and his sister in that very same prison if they
Basically.
Have to.
Yeah.
Like, on the same trip, like a rideshare driver doing a drop.
There's coffee in prison.
And he's like, all right, I'll tell you how to get him out. And so they're going to go do it.
They're going to do it in Neelix's ship, ship that I can't remember ever seeing.
Yeah. We only ever saw, like, Neelix's ship from the view screen, I feel like. Like, the inside of.
It is really Lego chic. It is like a 4-block of a Lego brick with a windshield.
Yeah. So like, things have gotten bad enough that Harry Kim is, like, physically fighting off the prison gangs. And like a fucking boss, Janeway is the first one down the chute with the fucking phaser rifle on wide. She blasts a bunch of prisoners. Tuvok comes down after her with the dustbuster.
Hands on your heads.
And a couple more security guys come down. They're getting set upon by Akritarian patrol ships. And we cut to, like, inside Neelix's ship, which... The last time we saw it, it was like a hoarder house. It was, like, full of shit. And now it's all, like, clean and nice. I feel like The Federation way of life has really rubbed off on Neelix.
It was really, like, gray Talaxian gardens up in that ship.
It was full of cats.
Nothing worse, I'm telling you.
I mean, doesn't Neelix kind of look like Alf, too?
Yeah. Yeah, no wonder it was full of cats. He was hard up for food sources.
Ben, this scene presents the greatest challenge to any director of Star Trek. And it is, can you make it look cool for a captain of a Federation starship to slide down a chute into a scene, phasers blasting? And this is a success. You want to know why it's a success? You don't POV inside the chute and see a Janeway slide down it toward the camera.
It's just a surprise that she shows up. She bursts into the scene like fucking Kool-Aid Man, and it rules.
The fun choice is being in the chute with her.
Yeah.
But that's also the wrong choice.
Yeah. When we get back to the ship, like, we get, like, one last little scene where the doc is, like, pulling the clamps out of their brains. And he's like, oh, yeah, that was totally, like, making you guys... angry ass motherfuckers. And in retrospect, Zio was the only person, like, Zio was nuts as hell, but he had figured out how to channel that into manifesto writing energy, you know?
Weird button on this episode where, like, the last scene is, like, Zio being placed into the electric chair and executed in this prison, and Tom Hanks is there, like, crying.
So sad.
We're up on two.
It's tough.
Super tough. Harry and Tom walk down the corridor, and Harry's like, hey, so, like, I'm kind of thinking about being haunted after this. And Tom is like, no, dude, come on, take it from me.
You're
I've gotten
just
out of
hungry.
A lot of jails.
You're not haunted. You're hungry.
Yeah. Let's go get a burger, buddy.
Yeah. Paris is hungry for friendship. And at Sound Dreams, that dish is all you can eat.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies, I don't like friends, and I don't like you.
I feel like you are entitled, and I don't use that word lightly, entitled to a prison episode in Star Trek every once in a while.
Yeah.
In prison for a crime you didn't commit, specifically. It was time. It was time for one of these episodes.
High time indeed.
Kim being the O'Brien of Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah.
The person that we just flog. I did like the episode. It was weird fun. I expected more from the chute.
Yeah.
As a thing, if you're going to name your episode the chute, I expected it to be a little more exotic, a little more dangerous, a little more interesting. It was not that. It was just your run-of-the-mill chute.
Is there like a movie where they find out that the prison that they're in is a space station?
I mean, this is Face Off, right? Like you're in a prison, and then it's revealed that you're on an oil derrick or something.
Right. When did Face Off come out? Did this precede?
97.
This is 96. Face Off bit this rhyme.
Face Off did bite this rhyme.
This is
Gina Gershon in this episode, though. Which... Yeah,
bit of a missed opportunity not to have Gershon in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I mentioned on the last episode, that this is one that I always expect. Like, I expect this premise when I do a rewatch of TNG.
Yeah.
And I think that what I get it crossed over with in my mind is that episode where Picard is in the cell with the, like, super aggressive guy and the super pacifist guy and the bullying Starfleet lady, and they're eating hockey pucks. And... like, I guess there's like some crossover between this premise and that, but I really like this episode. I think it's just a fun Voyager premise, and I had a great time watching it.
If you'll permit me to be Benjamin R. Harrison for a second, it makes me sad that prisons of the future are still not interested in rehabilitation.
Yeah. Why can't the Akritarians engage in a more restorative form of justice?
Yeah, they're a bunch of fucking assholes.
Fuck them.
Tell you what, Chris Pine's dad plays a great asshole in this episode.
Yeah, just a raging red asshole.
Yeah, one of the greats. Well, Ben, one place where it's rare to encounter a raging red asshole is the Priority One message inbox. You want to go see what we got waiting for us in there?
Let's do it, Adam.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Bowie and her mom. The message is to the last Hoosnock and the better future to come. The message goes like this. Bury P1s from False Prophets. Vote Worf for Chief Engineer. Sometimes Julian humps knees and we're not sure why. There are 200 TOS Star Trek books in transit. Malcolm and Kira are a supreme security power couple and hashtag relationship goals.
Okay.
OG from 2016. Shout out to Mr. Blue of RDHS. For the recommend.
Well, shout out to Mr. Blue for recommending our podcast, I think.
OG from 2016. God, 2016 was a long time ago.
A long time ago, but that's when this all started.
If you're a friend of DeSoto from 2016, we see you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like we see Bowie and her mom.
You've been through a lot with us.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're gonna, I mean, if you stick around... we'll see you through the rest of whatever bullshit's coming.
Our next Priority One message is also of a personal nature, and it's from Hillary, and it's to Adam and Ben. And
it goes, you know what my favorite reality show is? The Natchler.
Fuck you. I had an entire mezcal and an entire apple cider, and I'm halfway through my... Topo Chico exotic pineapple flavored hard seltzer.
Is it good? Is that Topo good?
It's pretty good.
I haven't had one of those.
I got this in a variety pack with other flavors, and I would say like 60% of the flavors were bad.
Oh no.
So I had those first and saved the ones that I liked for last.
Yeah. That's a good strategy.
But yeah, this is my last one. I like the pineapple ones.
Of course you do.
Here's
for a lot of reasons.
Hillary's message to you and me, Adam. I started your pod right before COVID, and it kept me sane as I finished school to become a therapist and kept a toddler alive with my Imzadi. Throwing scarves your way for the much-needed laughs. Question, and apologies if you've answered this earlier, where do you think is the best non-holodeck onboard location for chill hangs in Star Trek canon?
God, I don't know if this is just hack or easy or whatever, but like 10 forward, when I think of a place for chill hangs,
yeah,
and it's not a holodeck, I think there's a reason that Star Trek Picard started that series there. It is so familiar and so safe feeling,
yeah,
and so comfortable. It's where my mind starts for the answer to that question. I don't know even what my second choice would be. What about you?
I'm going to, just for variety's sake, I'm going to go to one that is also close at hand, but slightly left of center. The ensign's bunk area on the Excelsior in Star Trek VI that we got to go see in the episode where Tuvok goes back to his memories of his ute.
That was great.
We've gotten to know like what the ensign's bunk area is like a little bit in Lower Decks, the series, and seeing like Tuvok also having had that experience, the like dormitory style, like everybody sleeps in one room energy. I mean, it just seems like fun as hell. Like you get to know your bunk mates really well. I'm a fucking introvert, and I have nostalgia for that, you know?
Yeah, you're right. That's a good choice.
So, there's some chill hangs available. I mean, like, I think anything not in Starfleet is actually the chillest hang in the Star Trek universe. Like, the people that don't go risk
another
their lives.
Point that Lower Decks has made.
Yeah. Like, everybody else has easier, more relaxed lives, but,
Right.
But, yeah, that's my answer.
It's a good answer. If you've got a question like that to ask us, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Ask that kind of question.
Yeah,
you might get a
fun.
Very thoughtful response.
Yeah, from a couple of drunk idiots.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Brother, it's me today.
Yeah, feeling it. I think we both are.
I mean, we'll never have another opportunity to give it to Beans Morocco, will we?
No, we really won't. I mean, Beans Morocco on screen for all of 10 seconds, but he really makes a racket with those 10 seconds, huh?
He makes a racket with those 10 seconds and gets a, like, opening credits name check.
I do like that. I mean, look, it's not great. Anytime you have to share a screen credit-wise with a bunch of other people, not ideal.
No.
I think he shares with two others.
Yeah.
But where does your eye fall, Ben? It falls on Beans Morocco as a name. I don't even remember the other two credits on screen at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's the effect that a Beans Morocco has.
That is why you make your nom de guerre Beans Morocco.
It's one of the great, greatest gen names.
It really is. Right up there with Ron Canada.
It's right up there with Biff Yeager, the OG-est of the OG names.
How about you? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm going to put my chips on top of yours. Beans Morocco.
Great.
Easy. Done.
Done. Done and dusted.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it. All right. Ben, I mean, this is going to disappoint some people. We do have an episode coming up next in the series. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 3, Episode 4. What is its title and what is it about, Ben?
It's called The Swarm, and the cap is as follows. While the crew battles a swarm of alien ships, Kes races to prevent the Doctor's memory circuits from deteriorating.
Well, there's a chance we watch this in a weird way. The only way we're going to know that is by going to gach.biz/game and the game of buttholes, the will of the caretaker.
Yeah.
I'm looking at our game piece throbbing on top of Quark's face on square 18.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple squares ahead, we got something bad. His eyes uncovered. The Temerian-style episode that friends of DeSoto love to hate.
Yeah, they do not care for. That sounds
and I'm,
right.
It's yeah. up to me.
It's up to you, man. You gotta roll that bone.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right, I've got the die in my hand. It's up to me to avoid that square. And avoid it I have by rolling a one.
Okay.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
We're on square 19. We're still in the second row where we've been for years now.
For a really long time.
This is, we've broken the streak of drinking episodes. We're back to a semi-sober ep.
Normal amount of sobriety.
That's the way we'll bring you the next episode. And I'm looking forward to it personally. I might take a Brode anyway.
Yeah, why not?
For the vitamins.
It's just good vites.
Yeah.
Wow, well, thanks to everyone who tuned in. Thanks to everyone who supports us at MaximumFun.org/join. Thanks to the card daddy, Bill Tilly, who runs the @GreatestTrek accounts on Instagram and Twitter.
Thanks to Philippe Sobriero, Craig Anderson, and Andrew Wong Hoyer for making that game continue to play.
Yeah, we do continue to play it. I think there's a new square impending on the game of buttholes, the will of the caretaker.
Well, that's coming.
We got to thank Adam Ragusea, who made our original music for the program, and Dark Materia, who made the Picard song upon which all of that was based. Got to thank the Friends of DeSoto, who have created amazing communities all across the internet on Facebook, Reddit, Discord at drunkshimoda.com, and Twitter using the hashtag #GreatestGen.
Yeah.
Thanks for being cool people who are cool to each other and treat each other with decency and respect.
Yeah, there's a secret Shimoda gift exchange that may or may not be over at this point, but it's a yearly bit of holiday cheer that the Friends of DeSoto do with and for each other. That's just great. Some Friends of DeSoto have made a FOD community cookbook. Its writers reached out to us a while back to contribute some recipes. We've done that.
Yeah, all proceeds of this book are getting donated to the Hunger Project, which is a global charity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is great, this point.
Yeah, and there's, like, they did a really great job of, like, making sure that the recipes are really international, all kinds of different cuisines represented, and it's a really delightful thing. And we made a bit.ly. It's bit.ly/exocook to get that cookbook.
Yeah, so it may not be too late to get that in time for the major December holidays, but get it for yourself. You don't have to get it as a gift. Get it for yourself and start making some fun food.
Be selfish for once in your life, you know?
Yeah.
Do something for you. Well, Adam, I think with that, we should probably get out of here. And we'll be back next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that is wearing some pretty old-timey costumes for some reason.
Oh, you don't say.
No!
I love an old-timey costume.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.